gospel lesson, or that is appointed, is Luke 17. It's the well-known cleansing of the 10 lepers. It's an interesting account. I thought I would begin by saying that the way I have probably preached it in the past, and I know I've heard it preached in the past, probably isn't what the text is actually about. I've heard this preached as a "you should be more thankful" sermon, right? And I actually think it's about "you should know who to thank." So it's actually a very sort of Christological text, and if you were in chapel, I think a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Schumacher preached on this and did a pretty nice job, actually. So there's some interesting features in the light of Luke's context that come into play. Maybe I might just begin by showing what I think turns the text into a two-part one. If you just kind of glance quickly at verse 11, we have this Septuagintal-like expression, which reflects the Hebrew, vayehi, and it came to pass, right? And Luke likes this. So in verse 11, we have kai agenita, followed by en, to, plus an infinitive. And Luke repeats that expression in the middle of verse 14 as it's marked off. Kai agenita, en, to, plus infinitive. In the first half of the text, it's the 10 in Jesus. In the second half of the text, it's the 1 in Jesus. So I'll point out some other things. I think it's about, it's not who was more thankful or who was thankful. I think it's about who you thank and what it means to really give glory to God. So that's where we'll start. And we'll kind of take off here. So again, it's awkward Greek, but it reflects the Septuagint. Kai agenita can be followed by a number of things. Usually when it is, it can be translated just kind of temporally. And then en plus the dative article plus infinitive is also often a temporal expression. So it's kind of a doubly temporal expression. So you might just get all that in with while, see, or and it came to pass in the journeying to Jerusalem, or while he, Jesus, was journeying to Jerusalem. Now, of course, that's important. We're getting to the end of the travel narrative in Luke. It started in chapter 9. I think it's going to end in chapter 19, and it's three times or four times he's going to Jerusalem, he's going to Jerusalem. So Luke keeps that in front of us. So while he was going to Jerusalem, also he himself, autos, di erketa, this is an imperfect from di erkomai, it's a deponent verb, he was passing through the middle of Samaria and Galilee. Now this is a little actually hard to figure it out. Does this mean that Jesus is now going east and west? Because the boundary, Galilee is on top of Samaria, so maybe something like that. Verse 12, a genitive absolute, right? So the genitive participle with a genitive reference, and often as here, temporally. And while he was entering into Tenakomen, a certain village, ap eintezon, this is from ap antao, and it just means to come out in Greek. There's a couple of compound verbs. They all seem to have about the same meaning. 10 leprous men, deka leproi andres, greeted. Now, they're lepers, so Luke is careful to add, who stood parothen, from afar off, or from a distance. Verse 13, and they themselves, Aaron, this is from Iro, it's just the aorist indicative from Iro, third plural. They lifted up a voice as they said, Jesu epistata eleison emas. Jesu the name Jesus declines oddly. Given the context, this has to be taken as a vocative, even though it looks like a genitive singular or something. So Jesus, Master, show mercy to us or have mercy on us. Now, this is a good example, I think, of where a little word study will do some good. Luke's Gospel is the only New Testament writing that uses the term epistates, Master. And if you look it up, I think in each text, the speaker reveals that he knows something about Jesus. But as you read further into the text, it's clear that he doesn't know Jesus as well as he needs to, or she needs to. So the classic example is in the catch of great fish in Luke chapter 5, where Peter, says, Master, we toiled all night, nevertheless at your command. So he knows something about Jesus. He responds favorably to Jesus. But as the text goes on, it's clear that he doesn't really know Jesus yet, because he says, Lord, depart from me. Right? And I think that's the way we can take the 10 lepers. That is, they've heard about Jesus, they believe he has power. Do they really get what he's all about? And I think the answer is no. So, Jesus, Master, show mercy to us. Verse 14. And when he had seen them, take the participle temporally, he said to them, now we have what Bells calls a bang-bang participle. From poroiomai, it's passive deponent. So it's an aorist participle passive, masculine plural nominative. And it just piggybacks on to the main verb, which is, in this case, an imperative. Epideixata, which is aorist imperative from epideikneme. So go and show yourselves, tois hierousim, to the priests. This is in accordance with Leviticus 13, right? And I knew that not because I have Leviticus 13 memorized, but because it's in the side reference in Nestle Alon. Looking smart temporarily. Now see, it's interesting. The Nestle Alon text puts us kind of a minor break between the end of verse 14 and the beginning of verse 15. I think the break in the text actually occurs here. End of first half. See? So Jesus responds favorably, right? And now Luke repeats the construction, except now this time it's not Jesus who's doing the traveling, it's the lepers. Right? So I would actually break the text in the middle, between 14a and 14b. So Luke repeats himself. And it happened in their hypagoing, their going away, they were cleansed. Verse 15. Haste ex auton, but one of them... when he had seen that iathe, this is from iaomai, means to heal, that he was healed. I didn't look this up, but I guess iaomai must be middle deponent, so that the passive forms actually have a real meaning. I think, Ben, why don't you work up a two-page report on that? Okay, good. Saw that he was healed, he returned with a big voice. Now again, notice the contrast. They lifted up the voice in the first half, all 12. Now we have the one with a great voice. As he glorified God, verse 16, and he fell on the face, paratus padasatu, at his, namely Jesus' feet, as he gave thanks to him. Now here's a nice little payoff, actually. This is the only time where Jesus, in the New Testament, where Jesus is the indirect object, or maybe just called the object, of eucharisteo. You always give thanks to God, or something like that, but this is actually kind of a striking formulation, that he gave thanks to him, and all the commentaries mention this. And so now we have a contrast between the 11 and the 1, and the contrast becomes even starker, of course, with this last little clause, kai autos ein Samarites, and this guy was a Samaritan, right? Verse 17, and answering, Jesus said, first we have a question, 10, the 10 were cleansed, weren't they? Right? With ooh, a form of ooh, expecting a positive answer. Now we have another question, but the 9, who, where? Just as short and as sweet as that. This next one is also punctuated as a question, but I think It could also be a statement. I haven't quite decided on that. So let's just take it as a statement of fact. They were not found returning to give glory to God, except this stranger, this foreigner. I had a hard time making sense of this as a question, because it starts with "ooh," which is supposed to expect the answer "yes," right? So they were found returning glory to God, except this foreigner, weren't they? It just didn't make as much sense to me. So I think I want to take it just as a sentence, as a declarative statement. And then verse 19, to finish up, and then to pull in some data to, I think, help explain this. Verse 19, and he said to him, Anastas, which is the aorist participle active from anistemi, get up, rising, poriu, journey. This is the present imperative middle or passive second person singular from poroimai. Get going. And now here's the key, I think, to a lot of what's going on in the text. Hepistasu seso kense, your faith has saved you. And by the way, I think it's worth pointing out, even though a number of the English translations render this, your faith has made you well, I think that by translating it that way, in a modern North American ear, the meaning has been ratcheted down, if I could say it that way. This is what Jesus says. This I looked. It was interesting. I did not know this. I think four times in the Gospel of Luke, might be five, and every time it's in a context where the people around Jesus don't know really what's going on, but one person does. So, for instance, this is what Jesus says in Luke 7 to the woman who anoints his feet and wipes his feet with her hair. And all around him are people in the house of Simon the Pharisee, and they think they know Jesus, they think they have him pegged, but they don't. There's one person who really has Jesus pegged, and it's the woman who weeps, anoints his feet with her tears, and wipes his feet with her hair. There's another one in just over in chapter 18, I think. Yeah, it's the blind man at Jericho. And he says, Jesus, Master, have mercy on me. And everybody wants to get rid of him. See, there's all these people around Jesus and they don't know what's going on. But this guy knows what's going on. The other example, I can't recall. There's at least one more. But this pattern of, it's kind of a, maybe it's a narrative strategy. All of these texts where Jesus says this to people, nobody really gets Jesus except that one person to whom he says, your faith has saved you. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I think we should regard the Samaritan as really getting Jesus. He's really gotten him, right? Which is why he returns to give thanks. It's not that he's more thankful than the other people. See the difference? Otherwise, this sermon just, I mean, you either scold people or you tell them that they should be more thankful, but they're not, but Jesus will forgive their sins or something like that. I mean, it's easy to let this text fall into a kind of a moralism almost. But I think it's about knowing the person to whom thanks should be given. Okay? Now, there's opportunities for law and gospel there, you know, because Christians, you know, can get confused, even believers. Obviously, the gifts themselves can confuse us. We can be influenced by the culture around us. Some of the people in the congregation will be holding on to a very generic view of God. Right? So this is really an opportunity to proclaim that, look, if you want to acknowledge gifts that God has given you, there's only one person to whom that thanksgiving should be directed. And it's Jesus. And now you can take him to Jerusalem, right? The Jesus who went up to Jerusalem who suffered for the sins of the people who died and rose from the dead. So it's, again, it's kind of a Christological text. And what I recall about Dr. Schumacher's homily is that that's kind of what he said. It's not about the lepers. It's not about the Samaritan. It's about Jesus. And so I think that would be a good way to preach it. You might also be able to, I think it's at least possible that he sends them to the priest. Now, again, not necessarily to Jerusalem. I don't think everybody had to go to the temple in Jerusalem to get pronounced clean. They just had to go to priests. But I suppose it's possible that there might be some teaching that, in a sense, Jesus fulfills the function of the priests, and you don't have to go to the type anymore because the anti-type has come, or something like that. So that might be an additional way to proclaim the significance of Christ. But again, it's just a real good example of what happens if you can sort of discern the structure of what's going on, and then do a few word studies. So I worked on this morning for a couple of hours, and actually think I discovered some brand new stuff that I simply didn't know before, mostly because I'm not that well versed in the Gospel of Luke. So that's at least some comment and a little bit on preaching. And we actually have a few minutes left. I came to the end quick. So you want to go back to Ruth? Read. You whipped through 19 verses. So.
Well, yeah, of course, the connection with both foreigners.
Foreigners, right. Yeah, so you could make this point, too, that the most unlikely people end up believing in Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Kind of like, where does Ruth get the Yahwistic faith that she has?
Right.
Yeah, right. Yeah. She must have listened when Elimelech was catechizing his family before he died.
There you go. I think the text could support that.
Yeah, so you could scold fathers for not having home devotions.
There you go.
Yeah.
You said it.
I didn't say it. Well, I didn't use the word postmenopausal.
Oh.
Like 10 times.